that Barry Jones and I set up a long time ago. Julian Cribb has written a terrifying book about the way chemicals, well, like fire retardants and that golden oldie of DDT, have seeped into the most pristine environments on Earth, from the deepest oceans where flame retardants can be found in the tentacles of the octopus to the highest mountain where arsenic is found in the snow, and even in Antarctica where chemicals from the north can be found, yes, in the snow that falls there. Now, while Julian does not have a happy tale to tell, there's a way forward to reduce this poisoning, and it's all laid out in Earth Detox, published by Cambridge University Press. Welcome back, Julian.
Thanks, Philip.
Before we get into the current problem the chemicals are having, throughout your book you often refer back to the Minamata poisoning in Japan. Why was that so significant?
It was a horrible event. A chemical company was releasing mercury, toxic mercury, into the water, the waters of the bay, and the people who were catching fish and living on those fish started developing these horrible symptoms of poisoning. And it took 20, 30, 40 years for them to try to get justice. The company denied it. There was a terrible... It split Japan, basically. It split the Japanese political system. And there were such horrendous and heartbreaking cases of children being disabled in the womb and things like that. And there's a very famous picture, the Madonna of Minamata, showing a mother cradling in her arms her 16-year-old daughter, who was poisoned while she was in the womb and utterly disabled by these frightful chemicals. And it was the shot that was heard around the world, photographically speaking. Everybody could understand it. But that was back in the 1970s. And, you know, we seem to have learned nothing, because the amount of toxic stuff that is pouring out now is many, many times what it was in the 1970s.
And of course, it has a long half-life, doesn't it, as the residual amount of DDT today attest?
Well, DDT was a very tough chemical, and so are the flame retardants and the firefighting foam and things like that. They hang around for an awful long time, decades, maybe longer. Some chemicals break down quite quickly, but in the process they may mix with other chemicals, they may form other compounds that may be safe or may be dangerous. We just don't know. So what we have here, Philip, is a problem that is 6 times larger than climate change in terms of its volume, the amount of chemical emissions from human activity, and it's 40 times more deadly than climate change at the moment in terms of the number of people that it's killed.
Well, let's attempt some quantification. There's 2.5 billion tons manufactured annually, which is what, about a third of a ton of chemicals per person per year?
Yeah, and that's due to double and even triple by the middle of the century, because chemistry is off and running. I mean, the world chemical industry has now moved from the developed world to the developing world, where nobody controls it. In a lot of cases, it's not properly regulated. And, you know, farmers are throwing chemicals around on their land. The chemicals are getting into the water supply. They're getting into the groundwater that people drink. And, of course, they're all around us. I mean, everything made of plastic, you know, has got fumes coming out of it, which are not good for you.
I didn't realise that chemical production is now the second largest manufacturing industry globally.
It's gigantic. It's worth $6 or $7 trillion a year. I mean, it's part of the coal and the oil industry. They're all joined at the hip, basically. And so they don't really like what they do being talked about by the public. But it's now reached the point where we have to start talking about it, because it's costing 10 million lives a year. It's disabling 80 or 90 million people a year. It's wiping out the insect life on the planet, which has got huge consequences for the stability of the environment that we live in and for the food supply and things like that. So, you know, this really is a very big problem that has not been properly addressed. That's why I've written about it.
Let's look at some areas which are really top of the list, and one of them, of course, is mining. The waste created through mining is, well, it's immense. It's way more voluminous than the product being mined.
Yes, well, in the book, I'm estimating something of the order of 70 to 150 billion tons of waste rock and tailings and things like that released from mining. But the reality is that nobody's ever actually looked. Nobody's counted them. So we've got scientists counting the amount of carbon dioxide we produce, but nobody is looking at what the totality of the waste is from the mining industry. But it's immense. It could be up to 1,000 billion tons. So it's an unknown thing. It's going down the rivers. It's blowing around on the wind. It's just crushed rock and dirt, but it has effects on human health.
Well, I'm very well aware of it because, as you know, Julian, we live at above the great Hunter Valley coal mines, and the air is full of not only very unpleasant dust, but it's full of micro dot stuff that is giving young people in the district very, very serious asthma.
And we're seeing asthma and other lung diseases and other diseases absolutely pandemic and out of control at the moment. I mean, there's something estimated to be about 400 million asthmatics in the world today, which is vastly more than when we were growing up, Philip. And that applies to a whole lot of other quite unpleasant diseases which are making themselves manifest that were never there before, basically, or hardly there.
I'm well aware of the tailings dam situation in Australia, but you talk of 18,000 across the globe, plus the huge amounts of tailings that are released into waterways.
And as we know, these things have a distressing habit, the dams have a distressing habit of breaking and drowning people in this toxic filth, as well as blowing away as dust or leaking back into the river and killing the river. And that's happening, practically in every country in the world where they do mining. There's just no control over this stuff, or insufficient control. Well-run countries like Australia and so on have got some sort of control on it, but not very much. And in the end, it's left to the taxpayer to clean it up in most cases, or else it never gets cleaned up. It just goes on cycling forever.
As you know, Julian, we're organic farmers, so let's look at the guilt factor with chemicals in agriculture.
Yeah, well, there's about 5 million tonnes of highly specialised poisons are sprayed on your food every year. That's pesticides, insecticides, herbicides, things for controlling, various liver flukes and what have you. It's almost impossible to get a clean meal now. The soil is contaminated. Even organic farmers often have to have trouble with the soil. If they bought the farm or they took it over from someone who was a chemical farmer, then the soil is contaminated. People trying to grow their own veggies in cities find that the soil is contaminated by fallout from the polluted air. So it's very difficult to get clean food now. And this is extraordinary because all of our ancestors going back for a million years enjoyed clean food and clean air. And then suddenly, with the 20th century, things started to foul up. And since 1975, all of these things have become dramatically more polluted.
You mentioned insects before. We're very concerned at Elmswood about pesticides getting into the beehives via the innocent bees.
Yes, well, worldwide, of course, there's a holocaust of bees. Beehives have been dying out all the way around the world, particularly in North America, which is a heavy insecticide-using country. But everywhere, there was an article by Phil Goulson, a Scottish entomologist, in The Guardian just the other day, talking about 75% of insects worldwide have been wiped out. This is terrifying because if you wipe out the insects, you wipe out the birds, the frogs, the fish, all the other creatures that depend on them, and ultimately you affect something like a third of the human food supply because it requires insects to pollinate the crops.
If you walk outside in many parts of Australia, you're going to breathe in stuff which will give you great problems with the old lungs. You've mentioned a couple of them. Well, asthma, is the best known. But even inside, we're not safe and sound, are we? Because there's a lot of indoor pollution from the toxic fumes from plastics.
Exactly. And I mean, in fact, it's worse. The air is more polluted indoors than it is outdoors. How do I know this? My son put a pollution monitor in his son's, my grandson's bedroom, and it used to go through the roof every time you closed the window. Just the emissions from the carpet, from the paintwork, from all of this cheap furniture that we've got now, this stuff that's glued together with polymers. We're surrounded by this stuff. When we get into our cars, we're inhaling the vapors that come out of the plastic. We go into the office, it's exactly the same thing. And the estimate at the moment from the Lancet is about 8 million people are dying of lung disease now worldwide every single year.
Let's look at some of the known effects on health caused by chemical consumption. We were aware that lead had a proven impact on the IQ of children. I remember reading peer-reviewed stuff saying it was affecting the potency of the male through killing off the sperm. And you argue that it's now affecting the intelligence of human beings.
Yeah, well, it's not.
Is that a bit of a reach?
No. We know that the IQ of humans is going down. There have been seven scientific studies in seven different countries, and they've all shown a steady loss in IQ of about 3% a decade since the mid-1970s. Up until that time, human IQ was rising. It rose throughout the 20th century, but it peaked in the 1970s, and it's been going downhill ever since.
Are you sure it's causal and not simply coincidental?
We don't know the cause. At this stage, people are... What we know is it's not genetic, okay? The scientists have established this is not genetic, right? It's not that people are breeding more stupid children. So something in the environment is causing it. What is in the environment that could possibly be affecting the human brain? The answer is nerve poisons, neurotoxins.
Well, it would certainly go some distance to explaining the Trump phenomenon and some of the very peculiar goings-on in our own politics, but heavens above, I find it hard to credit that it can be directly, provably connected to the sort of pollutants you're describing.
It can't as yet. I'm floating that as a possibility. There has to be some explanation for why humans are getting dumber, because they are getting dumber. That's not disputable. And if you simply apply Occam's razor and you look at the most likely explanation, then a nerve poison that affects the growing brains of today's children is a very viable explanation, but it needs to be tested.
I'd blame media, the dumbing down of media, but that's just me. Now, look, there are differences between countries. The US has 3,000 chemical food ingredients that are permitted. Europe has only 400. Now, without significant testing, how do we know which chemicals are safe and which aren't?
Well, at the moment we don't, because a lot of chemical safety regulation has been grandfathered on us. If people didn't notice people dying of the chemical back in the 1960s and 70s, it was presumed to be safe. You know, but we've now got much better tests, and we're starting to see, you know, this phenomenon of all of these diseases, brain diseases and so forth, arising. And it's just simply inexplicable in any other terms.
It's interesting, isn't it, that even now we don't really know what it was in tobacco that caused the problem, but there was overwhelming evidence that cigarettes in toto did.
Yes, cigarette smoke contains 7,000 chemicals, so you don't know which ones in particular caused the lung cancer. We still don't.
Sorry, 7,000 chemicals? No wonder they're so expensive.
Yes, absolutely. But we still don't know. But we do know that cigarettes cause cancer. I mean, that linkage has been clearly established. And I think a similar linkage is going to be established for the loss of IQ. And for diseases such as ADHD and so on, depression, which is pandemic worldwide, about 300, 400 million people affected by depression.
Enough. Cheer us up. What can we do about it?
Okay, well, as with climate change, if we start to fix the problem, we create tremendous opportunities for for us. So green chemistry is the way to clean this up. These are chemicals that are not made from petrochemicals, from petroleum and coal and things like that, but they're made by other methods, often from natural, from plants and things of that nature. And they're much safer. They are tested so that they're much safer. So there is a route that we can go where chemicals can be made. We can still use chemicals, but they're not so poisonous. But we have to be aware of them. We have to understand the magnitude of the problem before we can fix the problem. That's the key thing. And that's what my book is really about, helping people to understand how big this problem is, that it's much larger than climate change. And we need to put the same amount of brain power and effort into it.
You say towards the end that governments aren't trustworthy. So we have to solve the problem ourselves.
Yeah, I believe that if we can inform people about which foods are safe to eat, which clothes are safe to wear, which things are safe to use in your house, and I'm meeting many informed young women now, young mothers who are doing this kind of research just so that they can bring their children up in a cleaner environment. I believe that consumers will drive this because these big companies, the only people they listen to are the consumers. At the end of the day, if their sales go down because they're producing a damaging problem product, then basically, you know, they're going to respond to that and they're going to have to produce clean, safe products. But obviously regulation's got to go with that. But public awareness worldwide is rising dramatically on this issue, and I think it's going to bring about a correction.
Well, we've got another answer coming up in our next story, which is to go off-grid. So we better do a segue to that. Julian Cribb's been talking to me, author of Earth Detox, How and Why We Should Clean Up Our Planet. It's published by Cambridge University Press, and Julian is co-founder of the Council for the Human Future, not to be confused with the Commission for the Future I mentioned earlier in the programme.